everyone, welcome back to the Women Blazers podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Witter. I'm excited to have Marina Carpenter as our featured guest for this episode. Marina serves as a general counsel and executive vice president of public affairs for the Arizona Coyotes. Marina shares her incredible journey as an Arizona native who played Division I volleyball at Arizona State University and built a remarkable career after earning her Juris Doctorate. It didn't take her long to become a strategic, creative, trusted, and impactful leader for the Arizona Coyotes. The sky's the limit for this trailblazing executive. I want to take a moment to present a heartfelt thanks to our sponsor, Entello Sports Partners, for supporting Women Blazers all season long. Entello Sports Partners is a talent search firm in sports and entertainment with a distinct mission of championing women leaders in sports. We appreciate Entello Sports' focus on advancing gender equity in our industry.
The first thing that comes to mind is like choose your inner circle wisely, whether that's in a partner or a spouse, but everything that you do will be easier or more fulfilling if the people around you are of similar character, similar motivations and things like that. So be very, very choosy about who you have in your inner circle because you're gonna lean on them in hard times and you'll be able to celebrate with them in the good times.
All right, Marina, so you are a Arizona native who went to Arizona State University where you played D1 volleyball. So how did being an athlete sort of shape your path into college and your overall college experience?
Yeah, so I was a kid who just loved sports and was always drawn to kind of team participation, even playing sports I wasn't really good at as a kid. I'm blessed enough to be fairly tall and coordinated enough that I got fairly good at volleyball. And so when I started thinking about what I was good at, it was always being part of a team. Mm-hmm. And so whether that is dealing with new coaches, different personalities, different dynamics, how you motivate people, how you help people, that was something that I kind of thrived at. And so exactly what you remember from playing, you know, high school basketball is kind of what I integrate into my daily life working in the sports industry.
Yeah. Did you know what you wanted to be while in college?
So no. Had you asked me, and I was only reminded of this because at the ASU volleyball reunion, they gave us kind of like our media guides. And mm-hmm. apparently, you know, 18-year-old Marina wanted to be a news anchor, which I, you know, I hate the idea of that now. So, I was a good student. I liked school. And when I was getting done playing the end of my college career was 2008, you know, kind of the recession time. I was like, shoot, I don't know if I'm going to have a job. I want to stay with something I'm good at. Let me stay in school. And so that's when I decided to go to law school.
Oh, that's awesome. So yeah. So your first degree at ASU was in international business. Mm-hmm. And then, as you just mentioned, you know, you invested more in your education and obtained your Juris Doctorate. So what inspired you then to really go to law school? What was the law path there? And what experiences during this time would you say inspired the career path you lead today?
Yeah. So it's really a terrible reason. And I think I should come up with something better. But I have an older sister and she was getting done with med school and that sounded terrible. And the GMAT, which was the entrance test to get an MBA, like was on a weekend where I had like a friend's birthday party or something. And so every lawyer that I had met, and I had a volleyball coach when I was a kid who was a lawyer, they always seemed to like have a good job and make good money. And they were busy, whether it was recession or if the economy was booming. And so it seemed like this very stable kind of career. And in addition to that, everyone always looks to, you know, their attorneys as like a good strategic advisor. And mm-hmm. that's kind of what I wanted to do. And that's how I could help people. And so sports was always kind of on the periphery for me, you know, being a student athlete, loving sports, It always seemed kind of like the dream that maybe not be attainable. And Arizona State University's law school had just launched their sports entertainment law journal. And it was like a great fun way to stay involved in like the legal side of things. And throughout my course of law school, I got lucky and got an internship with the Arizona Diamondbacks legal department. So then that almost made like the idea of being in the sports industry even more appealing. Mm-hmm. I learned very quickly on that I did not want to be a sports agent. It seemed exhausting to me, and all the sports agents I know understand that pain. And so I went and worked at a law firm, always kind of keeping my eye on sports, and I would still try to attend the kind of industry gathering, Sports Lawyers Association. And it was just kind of this, you know, perfect timing where things worked out that I got an opportunity back in sports.
Well, that's incredible. So let's pause there for a second. So you graduate, you start working for a law firm. So how did you sort of navigate the law firm side, though your passion was in sports? I mean, this is probably a foundational experience opportunity. So what were some of those key takeaways at your time at the law firm?
Yeah. So generally, when you join a firm, you join a practice group. So you either go into litigation or mergers and acquisitions, real estate, environmental, employment. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and I wasn't sure what would be the best avenue to get me to sports. So I picked a law firm that was going to allow me to work with several of their different groups, which was kind of great. I got a great foundational kind of knowledge set in a lot of different areas, which looking back at it, set me up very well to go in-house with a sports property, because you do need to know a little bit about employment and contract and litigation and risk management. So it was kind of this like great foundational learning. And so I did that. It was exhausting, working for several different partners in different lines of the law. And the law is so complex that it's very, very hard to be an expert in one thing if you're not going to dedicate all your time to it. So it was really this time commitment for me to be competent and valuable, or at least value add, in a bunch of different areas. But I'm really glad that that investment in time and knowledge and, you know, resources and mentors paid off to kind of set me up to be a generalist.
Yeah. Would you recommend to somebody to do that before getting into sort of the sports industry side of law?
Yeah, my thoughts there is, even though even everyone's ultimate dream is like to get into sports, you want to be self-sufficient and a value add as soon as you are in a sports property. And the sports industry and teams are not usually set up that way to like really grow and develop. So go get your growth and development in private practice, where they do have, you know, partners and resources and the tools to, you know, take you from fresh out of law school into a contributing advisor. And so in my view, law firms do it better than sports teams, and you can probably do it a lot faster, and no need to learn lessons the hard way if you can learn them from other people. And yeah. So going to kind of get your experience at a private practice and then going in-house, to me, is a much more realistic, or probably more probable, path, because you can join and add value right away. Had I joined a sports team right when I was out of law school, there's just so much that I hadn't experienced or seen that I probably wouldn't have been as successful.
Right. That value add component is so important, it sounds like, I mean, in this path. And, you know, sounds like that worked out really well. And I appreciate you sharing that advice with our listeners. You know, after 3 years with the law firm, you then make a move into the sports team world. You become the general counsel for the Tucson Roadrunners. I always want to say toucan. Is that weird?
It's the bird thing. Yeah.
It's the bird thing. So the Tucson Roadrunners, which is the Coyotes AHL affiliate. So how did you land this first opportunity, and what were some of the highlights from your experience working for the Roadrunners?
Yeah. So this was back in 2016, and my mentors, Nona Lee and Caleb J, recommended me to the Coyotes. I had interned with them during law school, and they thought I would be a good fit. And so the Coyotes gave me a call, and they kind of managed some services at kind of a holdco level. So I never lived in Tucson. I would go down there sporadically, but it was really fun and exciting. And, you know, the AHL or AAA or AA, single A baseball, those I think are really good opportunities for growth as well, because you can do a lot of things with lower risk impact. Yeah. They're also, and from a legal standpoint, less regulated than some of the pro teams. And so you do have some creative kind of business operation exploration that you can do. So it was a lot of fun. 2016 was the first year that the Tucson Roadrunners were in Tucson. The Coyotes had bought their affiliate from Springfield and moved them down. So it was kind of like this fun little startup, like new staff, new building, new venue, new city relationships, with a fan base that really embraced them. And I kind of got to ride that wave with them. So it was a lot of fun, and things quickly translated, or I could scale them up to execute at the NHL level.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a great opportunity. I didn't realize that that was the year that they had moved there. So to your point, right, this is an awesome experience in terms of a startup mentality opportunity. And you guys are probably all building it together at that point.
Yep.
So now in 2016, you joined the Arizona Coyotes as an associate general counsel. In 2018, you accepted an expanded role as the chief of staff while also serving as the GC. And then in 2020, you were then named EVP of public affairs as well as general counsel. So what was your approach to growth from the AHL team to the NHL team and further up the internal ladder with the Coyotes?
Yeah, so my approach is always like, how can I be the most helpful? And I think that kind of relates back to me as a student athlete, is everyone has a role to play, and sometimes that changes. And so I've had the benefit of having very new and unique experiences. The Arizona Coyotes have gone through several ownership transactions, which generally means kind of leadership and executive transactions or transitions. And so there was room for me to help. And so when I started, I did nothing but legal work, and I had some fabulous kind of department heads that embraced me, because sometimes people don't like lawyers. And I had a group that let me learn the ticketing business, let me learn how corporate partnerships really work, let me learn how hockey operations and a GM runs his team. And that positioned me to really, I guess, slip into more of an operations role. So my kind of middle tenure, that chief of staff, I was the right hand for our president, and I sat in on all the meetings. We had some major initiatives we were working on. We grew revenue. It was a lot of fun. It was a ton of work, but it was a lot of fun. And then kind of my last regime, when I slipped into a more public facing role, a few things were going on. Sports betting was getting introduced in Arizona. And we had a lot of kind of need for public involvement. So I went from this very internal at my desk, staring at documents all day, to kind of in the trenches with a bunch of different departments, to very external facing. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't always comfortable, but, you know, with a little preparation, I feel like you can do a lot. And so from a management standpoint, how I, you know, schedule my day and how I work with others, I wouldn't trade the experience for the world.
Yeah. It sounds like your approach was right on. I mean, it seems like every few years you're growing into a new role that's expanded. That's then, to your point, sort of pushing you outside of your comfort zone. And you can only, that's what you want, but you don't know that you want it until you have it. Is that fair to say?
Totally.
It's always a good experience, obviously. And then at the conclusion of this, obviously this NHL regular season, it's, you know, no secret that the Coyotes were purchased and relocated to Utah after years of working extremely hard to secure a new home there in Arizona. You know, we have had other guests on the podcast, who have experienced sort of that team relocation, and each situation is obviously unique, but would love to simply ask, you know, how this experience has strengthened you and motivated you in your leadership role, and how you've navigated the path forward for yourself and for that organization.
Yeah, so it's really, I feel really torn about it. You know, I have been pursuing, you know, finding the Coyotes their forever home in Arizona for a very long time. It was a battle that was going on even before I joined the club. And so I do feel like this sense of disappointment, and that I've like let the fan base down, because that was the focus. That was the dream. That was the goal. On the other side, it has provided an opportunity for me personally, and it sounds selfish, I've just learned a ton. Right. I've gone through transitions before. This one was done in a very creative way. I give credit to Commissioner Bettman for his, you know, creative problem solving skills to really fit the needs of each major party involved, with the exception of the fan base here in Arizona, of course. But yeah, new experience. You know, usually it takes months and months for a deal to close. We did this one in, I think, like 19 days.
Wow.
And it was a little bit more unique. So it was a challenge, to say the least. You know, I cried on our last home game, even though I told myself I wasn't going to. It's just been a part of my family. That's the only thing my kids have known. But I am excited for our players and the city of Salt Lake and the state of Utah, because they're getting a great, great group of guys. And I hope they thrive there.
Oh, I'm sure they will. And to your point, like, I would imagine, yeah, these last few weeks, months, that especially that last game was extremely emotional. But I imagine there's a spark in you that knows that, like, hockey will be back in Arizona at some point.
No doubt. That's something I can say with confidence. I think this market deserves it, and they will demand it. It's just going to be a matter of time.
Yeah. And that's the key. And that's the nice part, is you got time now to rebuild it, get it right. And it's going to be better than ever. I have no doubt of that.
Yep. That's so true.
So in every episode, I always like to hit on sort of key topics, and these are like themes of topics I've had in previous conversations. And one of the ones I wanted to touch on with you is relationships. You know, you're in this public affairs sort of role, and obviously in this industry, and in your line of work, of course, you know, there is power in relationships, which I think is sometimes generally challenging for some of us, you know, professional women. Like, how do we grow and develop meaningful and valuable relationships? So curious if you could share a little bit, what's your approach to growing your network and developing key relationships that sort of move you forward, but also move the business forward?
Yeah. So I think it really boils down to time and attention. And something kind of early on in my career, I was so busy doing the work, you know, like getting out a contract or kind of like putting things together, that I didn't give enough attention to the time that relationships deserve. Now it's, I want to know about your kids. I want to know about your fun dog. What vacation are you looking forward to? And really the human element of the work. We can find expertise in a lot of different areas, but we can't get relationships without kind of the time and attention. So that's something that I've been trying to be more and more intentional about, of like, human and the person always comes first, and then the work or the topic of the day or what's new in the sports business world is secondary. And to me, that to me is like, just set up, like, I can pick up the phone, anyone, you know. Obviously I have a bunch of coworkers in Arizona that I want to make sure are still contributing to the fabulous industry that is sports. Like, how does that happen? Or what are the other creative ways to do that? You know, you find your confidants. You know, I was a new mom in sports a few years ago, and just being open about that, I found some fabulous people to, try to relate to, or at least, you know, ride the highs and lows together, fun and exciting versus what's exhausting and burned out. So
always something. Well, it's funny you say that, because I definitely, in the very beginning of my career too, I felt like I was so focused on the work, and I would say I definitely neglected building like relationships. I didn't prioritize it. Not to say I didn't have good relationships, I probably just didn't prioritize it. And I did notice that. I remember when my husband and I got our first puppy, and then I had like something to talk about, and then we had children, and then your kids. It's like, when you have things that are relatable, how much that bridges gap of conversation. When I was younger and I didn't have those sort of shared things with my counterparts, it made it harder. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I was always so like insular too. Like, I could tell you everything about our P&L, what was going on with ticket sales and everything, but I ignored some of what was going on in the industry. And I think that kind of like put me behind. It's important to understand how even college sports and what's going on there and how that may affect the pro world and, you know, moves that are being made, leagues doing aggressive and new things. It's important, even if it doesn't impact what you're doing in the moment, having that foundational context of our industry, I think, is valuable.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. Knowledge is key. And yeah, read SPJ, you know, do your research, take time to have something to contribute to the conversation, even if it's not your work specifically. I would agree with that. Definitely. The next topic is lifestyle. So on this podcast, one thing that I really wanted to do We've actually, I feel like we've a little bit of accomplished in the conversations is sort of throughout this idea of work-life balance. We know it's a sort of challenging to achieve, but more in the sense that it's not that we're looking to seek out and obtain this sort of work-life balance concept, but more that we have shaped our lifestyles to meet the people in our lives and the work that we do. And it's more about that component of lifestyle versus work-life balance. And so curious, like, how do you structure and manage your lifestyle so that it works for you and your family and everything that brings you joy in life outside of work?
Yeah, so I've gotten better at this over time, but learning how to say no, and I'm such a, you know, type A people pleaser that I hate saying no, but in order to be present for your kids, be a good spouse, or, you know, make sure you're calling your grandma on her birthday, you just have to kind of find a way to say no. And to me, that's been able to sustain more relationships over time because you give them the focus and the attention in the moment that you want them to. Because otherwise, your calendar and your inbox would take over your life completely. And so, yeah, me learning how to say no was great in that. And so, you know, I get to go to my son's skateboarding class Friday afternoons. I might not go to happy hour with my friends, but that's my Friday. And I don't want to miss a, you know, school performance or a t-ball game and things like that.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. And when you say no, do you have a sense of guilt or you have a sense of like validation? What's the feeling?
So it's probably a mixed combination of both. So I try to say no, but I can't. next week. No, but I will introduce you to a colleague that will be just as helpful or inspiring. And so it's kind of this nice way to bridge that disappointment. So I don't feel the guilt without leaving that, obligation unfulfilled.
Yeah. No, and I think that's the big thing too. I think I take away from that is like, you almost got to give yourself permission to say no first, you know, that's the hardest part is getting to that point to realize when I say no, it doesn't mean I'm minimizing my value or, you know, all of the things that sort of creep into your head, why you feel like you have to say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of that battle, but you have to get to a point where you realize that you have, you know, other things, especially when you have a child, right? Like it's like yeah. Your son needs you at his skateboard, you know, meet. And then finally, I always like to end with this a little bit of advice. So we'd love to ask Marina, what advice would you leave for our listeners who are seeking to grow their careers in this industry?
The first thing that comes to mind is like, choose your inner circle wisely, whether that's in a partner or a spouse, but everything that you do will be easier or more fulfilling if the people around you are of similar character, similar motivations and things like that. So be very, very choosy about who you have in your inner circle because you're going to lean on them in hard times and you'll be able to celebrate them in the good times.
That's wonderful advice. Thank you so much for sharing your journey, your insights, that wonderful advice there at the end with all of us today. And thank you for being a guest on Women Blazers.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So much fun.
And that's a wrap on the 84th episode of the Women Blazers podcast. Thank you to Marina for sharing her journey and insights with all of us today. And as a gesture of gratitude, Intello Sports Partners will gift Marina with a one-year membership for her to join the Pro Sports Assembly, an organization dedicated to promoting equity in pro sports. I encourage you to visit prosportsassembly.org for details on joining this impactful organization. I also want to thank Intello Sports for their incredible support and the faith they have in the podcast's mission. And also, to stay connected and to engage with the Women Blazers community, follow us on Instagram at Women Blazers. And be sure to mark your calendars for the next episode dropping Monday, May 27th. Until next time, I hope everyone has a wonderful week.